10. A Game of Cricket. Because Modo couldn't maintain his appearance for longer than 5 hours, he was forced to spend much of his time in his cabin. Each morning, after a breakfast of rolls and eggs in the dining room, he would return to his room and let his doctor face slide into his real one. Then he'd spar with Tharpa, earning new bruises every day. In the afternoons, Mrs. Finchley would arrive for his acting lessons. Modo was reminded of his days in Ravenscroft, and his heart ached for that simpler time when it was just him, Mrs. Finchley, Tharpa, and occasionally Mr. Socrates. "Is this a dagger which I see before me? The handle toward my hand?" Modo recited. "Come, let me clutch thee." Mrs. Finchley clapped her hands. "You have outgrown me." Modo enjoyed the part of Macbeth, one of his favourite characters. "But I haven't outgrown you," he answered. She patted his shoulder. "I mean in your talent. I hope you never outgrow spending time with me. I'm so proud. There are times when you are completely involved, when you become the character you are playing. That's at the heart of great acting. You have tremendous ability for someone so young, but you need to forget something." "Forget what?" "Yourself. The best actors must believe in their heart that they are who they pretend to be." There must be something to that, Modo decided. But he never felt as though he could forget who he was, so he could never completely throw himself into a part. How could he forget his life, his face? He set down the imaginary dagger. "How is Octavia progressing in her studies?" he asked. He hadn't had more than a few private conversations with her since they'd boarded the ship. She joined them for meals, but was busy with her own training. "She's progressing nicely. A smart, raw talent, that one," Mrs. Finchley said. "As talented as moi." He feigned light-heartedness. Mrs. Finchley had sounded so proud of her, and his fists had involuntarily tightened. "Ah, each of you has your own unique talent. Now let's work on your accent and bearing." After the 4th straight day of his physical training, he knocked Tharpa onto his back twice. Each time, Tharpa stood, brushed himself off, and gave Modo a grin. "Good, good." When Modo wasn't training, he wandered the Rome, looking out at the Atlantic, stopping at the saloon for lemonade or lime juice. He was relieved that the steamship hugged the European coast. He shivered when he imagined falling into that water again, as he had only a few short months ago. He'd come so close to freezing to death. His body remembered it well. And every time he looked down into the deeps, he thought of Captain Monturiel and Serdar, and swallowed a lump of sadness. The Atlantic was their grave, a sunken submarine ship their coffin. He distracted himself from his memories by following one of Mr. Socrates' orders, to learn as much about the other passengers as possible. There were 125 saloon passengers in all. It had been a simple matter of asking for a tour of the clerk's office, then sneaking a look at the list while the clerk was called out to answer some question about pay stubs. The names were common enough. Mr. and Mrs. Henderson, Mr. and Mrs. Hare, Messrs. M. Collier and C. P. Davis, Mr. Carpenter, Miss Hoddle and Miss Fulton, Mr. and Mrs. O. Shepherd and 2 children, Mr. R. Reed and son A. Reed, and servant C. Chandra, and Mrs. Finchley. Modo read the last few lines again. There it was in writing. Anyone who read it would believe he was Mr. Socrates' son. He assumed that Mrs. Finchley hadn't had to change her name because she wasn't an agent. And it was curious that Tharpa wasn't listed by name as a passenger. If the ship went down and all souls were lost, would he even be counted? Modo memorized the list. He would make it a game to put a name to each of the faces. He would do the same with all of the ship's cabin boys, stewards, seamen, and officers. Mr. Socrates didn't expect any sort of trouble on the ship, but it was wise to know with whom they were spending so much time. There were other distractions, of course. He tried to learn as much as possible about Australia by listening to the accents of the colonial passengers and quizzing any with whom he chatted. Being in first class also meant painting lessons, which he skipped, card games, sing-alongs, croquet on the deck, and even cricket in one of the open holds. Modo had never played cricket, but he'd read the rulebook over a year ago. A passing knowledge of the game would be important to survival in the British Empire, he'd decided. He'd expected to be spending more time with Mr. Socrates, but his father was either in his cabin doing research or with the officers of the ship. Mr. Socrates did dine with Modo and Tharpa at breakfast, but the discussion was mostly about the weather. "Will we be playing any cricket, father?" Modo asked on the sixth morning of their voyage. He enjoyed calling his master father. Mrs. Finchley had said he should throw himself into his part, and so he would. Mr. Socrates laughed. "My cricket days are done." "Would you play, Tharpa?" Modo asked. "The rules of propriety don't allow me to play," Tharpa said. "What do you mean?" "Don't be soft-headed, son," Mr. Socrates said. "Tharpa is a servant. He cannot play cricket with the first-class passengers. Besides which, his place is at my side." "I bet you could knock the ball right across the Atlantic," Modo said. "You'd hit it so hard their first-class lily-white pants would fall right off." Tharpa laughed. "You are kind, though incorrect. It is their socks I would knock off." Modo signed up for the next game that afternoon and spent a few hours in the open hold playing against a collection of officers, doctors, a hotel owner, an engineer, and even a priest, memorizing their names as he did so. It was a sunny day, and down in the hold he began to sweat. When it was his turn at bat, Modo stood behind his wooden wicket and stared at the bowler, Mr. Haraldson, a clerk from London. Modo knew the point of the game was to prevent the ball from striking his wicket, and to hit it far enough to give him time to change places with the second batter 15 feet away. He glanced at the upper deck and was surprised to see Mr. Socrates looking down at him. Alongside him were Captain Adamson and a few other elderly gentlemen. Modo gripped the white willow cricket bat too tightly, and his first swings were utter misses, allowing the ball to strike his wicket and knock down two of its stumps. He was already nearly out, and he hadn't even hit the ball. He released his breath and relaxed his shoulders, just as Tharpa had told him to do 1,000 times. With his next swing, he struck the ball hard, ringing it off the metal wall and hitting Lieutenant Sanders in the stomach, knocking him to the ground. "My son doesn't know his own strength," he heard Mr. Socrates say. Modo rushed over and apologized to the lieutenant, but even as he did so, he couldn't help feeling a little pride. He could play cricket. He was just like a regular Englishman after all. Who needed a fancy education at Oxford? Ravenscroft had been good enough. The lieutenant waved him away. "It's a minor injury. Take your place." As Modo walked to his wicket, he glanced back up at the spectators. Mr. Socrates had turned his back and was discussing something with the captain. Wasn't he going to watch the rest of the game? There were only 5 other spectators. Modo was pleased that he could immediately recall the names and occupations of 4 of them. The 5th was a dark-haired man with glasses, who seemed to be travelling alone. Modo had yet to match a name with his face. However, as he picked up the cricket bat, it came to him with a laugh. The only name he hadn't matched was Mr. Carpenter. Now that he knew the man's name, he'd have to discover his occupation. Modo was delighted. A run scored in cricket, and now he had matched every passenger's name to a face. He glanced back at Mr. Carpenter, who was still watching him. Modo nodded at him and prepared to swing, whispering at the bowler, "You can't have my wicket."